But he did it, and that was the plan to do it all along. The interesting thing is that John McCain had plenty of time to choose his running mate. After all, he was the presumptive Republican nominee way back in March. Obama didn't secure his nomination till June, and he came up with Joe Biden, a very good choice, by the way, in approximately 2 months. Well, John McCain had almost 6 months to make his choice, but apparently as late as Wednesday before the Friday, when John McCain was to make his announcement, he was still undecided. He was still fiddling around. And I guess he wanted to see if Barack Obama chose Hillary Clinton, because he decided that if Obama didn't, he was going to make a cynical play for those Hillary Clinton voters by selecting not the most qualified person to be president, but some woman, any woman, hopefully a young woman, hopefully a young evangelical Christian woman, and it really didn't matter whether she was qualified or not. He did have a number of qualified choices, people that share his philosophy, which certainly I don't share, but he didn't pick any of those. He even had some female choices. I mean, think of someone like Christine Todd Whitman, a moderate governor from New Jersey, but, oh, she supports the right of women to choose to have an abortion. Can't have her. Apparently, that's why he also threw out Jill Lieberman, who we think of as way too far to the right, but the Republican Party is thought of as too far to the left. He threw out him. He threw out other pro-choice people, including Governor Tom Ridge, former Homeland Security chairman. Whatever you think of Tom Ridge, he certainly would have been a capable choice that no one would have challenged. No, he couldn't have that. He needed to have an evangelical. And he wanted someone pro-life, and he wanted a woman. There was still another choice he could have made. He could have gone to Kay Bailey Hutchison of Texas. She has been a senator for, I don't know how long, at least 15, 20 years. No one would doubt her experience. But, well, she wasn't young enough, I guess. Wasn't pretty enough. I'm not sure. He's never made clear why she wasn't on the shortlist. I mean, if he wanted a woman. So he came and chose, everyone knows, Sarah Palin, someone who none of us had ever heard of prior to his choice, but someone who, well, let's face it, is a Christian evangelical, and it hardly mattered that she'd only spent, a year and a half as governor of a state with about, a quarter of the people of Brooklyn, and before that, a mayor of a town of 6,000. But he trotted her out. He said that she was a reformer just like he was. He was proud of the fact that she refused the bridge to nowhere. Well, of course, the true story is she had lobbied for that bridge to nowhere, that bridge in Alaska to an Gravina Island where 50 people lived nearby the city of Ketchikan. City, I mean, you know, what they call cities in Alaska, we would call small towns anywhere else. In any case, she had lobbied for it, and then when Congress decided that the Bridge to Nowhere was a waste of money, Congress cut off the funds to the Bridge to Nowhere. What did our governor, Sarah Palin, vice presidential nominee, do? Well, she took the money anyway, didn't spend it on the bridge, and, you know, kept it and spent it on other things. Hardly a woman that is against earmarks. After all, even the mayor of LaSalle, what she did was get a lot of money for her town of 5 or 6 or maybe even 7,000, though I don't think it's that high. She got some $27 million for her town. Now, that's $4,000 a person. That's pretty good when you think about it, but it doesn't show someone who's against earmarks. Doesn't so show someone who would cut spending. She's hardly a fiscal conservative. If you want a big government, big spending evangelical Christian, you got her. I haven't even gotten to the scandals yet. This hour, I want to spend the whole hour talking about Sarah Palin. Now, I know it's unfair, in a sense, because we're not talking about the Democratic Convention last week. We're not talking about the brilliant speech of Obama and the wonderful speeches of everyone else there. But, you know, we did some of that last week, and we will have more time as well. Plus, of course, there's a Republican National Convention going on. So if you want to talk about any aspect of that, we can. But I want to spend most of the hour talking about Sarah Palin because, let's face it, there's a lot to talk about. There is Troopergate and Babygate 1 and Babygate 2. There is Buchanangate and Secessiongate. Do you know about that? That's one of my personal favorites. Yes, Apparently she was associated with a party that was interested in seceding from the United States, making Alaska go away, no longer be part of the United States. There is so much to talk about with Sarah Palin. It's not just that she's a typical fundamentalist Christian right-wing conservative. It's not just that she wants to teach creationism in the schools. It's not just that she thinks that, well, polar bears shouldn't be an endangered species anymore because she wants to hunt them. No. It's much more than that. In the Troopergate scandal, for example, it looks like she's been lying to the public all along. In Babygate 1, that's the one that most people know about, her 17-year-old daughter is pregnant. And, you know, I'm not trying to pick on her daughter, but you have to wonder about her mother. Her mother believes in abstinence-only education. And you got to wonder about what are the consequences when you believe in abstinence-only education and you believe that abortion should never be allowed, even in cases of rape or incest. What does that mean? It means under Governor Sarah Palin and President Palin? Boy, the name just makes me shudder. But, you know, John McCain, he's 72. He's got melanoma. And those things don't go away. And, you know, if he were to win and even win a second term, he'd be 80 before he's done. Actually, President Palin, if McCain wins, is a distinct possibility. Anyway, under President Palin, we would have not only abstinence education, not only abortion outlawed, even in cases of rape or incest. But think about what that means. That means we're going to have a lot of kids just like her daughter. So I'm not picking on her daughter when I say that the consequences of the things that Palin believes in, the things that she teaches to her family, the things she would require on all of us, even those of us that don't share her particular extremist brand of Christianity, would be we'd have a lot of unmarried teenage girls running around pregnant. So think about it. I mean, today you just don't see that many 16, 17, 15, 14-year-old girls pregnant. But under Sarah Palin, well, there will be tens of thousands of them, maybe hundreds of thousands. Heck, maybe 7th or 8th grade. You got those 12-year-olds. After all, if a man wants to have a baby, all he does is rape a 12-year-old. He may go to jail, but the baby has to be born. Good old President Palin. So that's Babygate 1 relating to her own child, and we'll get to that, too, because apparently John McCain didn't know about it until Wednesday. That's right. Wednesday, last Wednesday, a week ago today. He didn't know about it till the day before he chose her, which was Thursday. The interesting thing about Palin, I think, is not so much about her, but what it says about John McCain. I mean, he had 6 months to choose her, and now we're learning that he was scrambling at the last minute. Apparently, he was looking at Joe Lieberman, but no. Joe Lieberman, whatever you hate about him, he's pro-choice. McCain can't have someone pro-choice because, let's face it, that's a litmus test for the Republican Party. You are not allowed to run for national office. You're not allowed to be a Supreme Court justice. You're really not allowed to go much of anywhere in the Republican Party these days unless you believe in criminalizing abortion. In fact, there's even a constitutional amendment that they're proposing to overturn Roe v. Wade that would say that life begins at conception. Now, of course, what that means is if life begins at conception, then if you have an abortion, well, you've committed murder, and you would get the death penalty because that's the law for premeditated murder in some 36 states. Otherwise, I guess you could get life imprisonment. Very interesting. Of course, if you have a miscarriage and maybe you were a bit negligent, let's say that a woman, decides to go up the stairs a little too fast and she has a miscarriage, then that personal tragedy becomes negligent homicide. Now, negligent homicide is a very important crime that we have to punish. I mean, let's face it, a drunk driver has committed negligent homicide. It's not the same as first-degree murder. But if you drink and drive and kill someone, I think it's understandable why we have criminal punishment for such things. Well, under Sarah Palin, I guess the same thing would happen with a miscarriage. If it's the woman's fault and she has a miscarriage, then that's negligent homicide. That's the same as drunk driving. I guess the miscarriage would only put the woman in jail for 2 or 3 years and not the life term she would get for abortion or the death penalty. By the way, think about the death penalty there. Here you have a perfectly healthy woman. She has an abortion because, oh, I don't know, she's 13 and she doesn't want a baby. Or maybe she just doesn't want to bear the seed of a rapist. So she undergoes this brutal rape, and she doesn't want the rapist to have a child that you know, where the child has to visit his father in jail, the rapist, the man who raped her. No. So she decides to have an abortion. Well, under Sarah Palin, that's murder. And since that's murder, we can give her the death penalty, because Palin also supports the death penalty. So you have this perfectly fine woman. First, she's viciously raped. And second, when she gets rid of the rapist's fetus, the cells living inside her that will grow to be the child of the rapist, then she herself is killed. Instead of, I guess we just substitute the woman's life for, well, actually, if she's killed, do you kill the fetus? I mean, this all gets very complicated. If you have to give someone the death penalty for having an abortion, I guess the rule is first you leave the baby-making machine alone. You force the woman to have the rape. Well, no, she's had the abortion. Okay, so there's no seed. All right, because I was concerned. You know, how do you have the death penalty for a pregnant woman when you can't kill the fetus, but I guess she's already had the abortion. So, all right, because, yeah, it's very confusing under President Palin. But the heart of what I want to talk about with Palin is not her views on abortion, but all the different scandals. And in this hour, and I also want to hear from you, but I want to talk about Troopergate, Babygate 1, that of her child, Babygate 2, which is how she took a 4,000-mile flight from Texas to Alaska because she and her husband didn't want her baby, the one with Down syndrome, to be born in Texas. She wanted it to be born in Alaska. As her husband put it, well, you know, you can't have a fish picker from Texas. So in order to have that baby born in Alaska, she took a 4,000-mile flight from Texas to Anchorage. By the way, 4,000 miles, maybe sometimes it's hard to know. Los Angeles to New York, that's about 3,000 miles. People don't realize how big and how far away Alaska is. 4,000 miles is about the distance from London to Chicago. It's a pretty far distance. And she took that 8-hour flight. And the thing I want to know about all of this is, since we can't judge Sarah Palin based on her public career, well, she doesn't have much of a public career, and what she does has been filled with corruption, and we'll talk about Troopergate in a minute. She is to be judged, according to John McCain, because she's a good mother. She's a hockey mom. She has 5 kids. She's got a beautiful-looking family. So we are to judge her, McCain tells us, not on her policies. She hasn't been in office very long. Frankly, her views aren't known on foreign policy at all. She has 0 views on foreign policy. And other than that, she's a fundamentalist Christian, and she loves oil because she lives in Alaska. Other than that, it's kind of hard to know what she stands for. So we are to judge her as a mother, as someone who is a good hockey mom, someone who's just like you, ordinary American. But if we judge her on a mother, then what are we to say about the fact that she endangered her fetus by taking that 4,000-mile flight? What are we to think about the fact that she didn't even notify Alaska Airlines that she had begun labor that day? Yes, my friends, begun labor that day. This wasn't a question of a pregnant woman taking a long flight, even though the American College of Gynecologists and Obstetricians says that no woman that's 36 weeks pregnant should board a plane. No, this is a woman who started going into labor in Dallas, was, and sorry to be graphic here, but was leaking amniotic fluid before she got on the plane. But nevertheless, flew 8 hours, flew 4,000 miles, didn't tell the airline she was flying while in labor, but did so because, well, her husband didn't want a fish picker from Texas. He wanted his Down syndrome child. I don't know that the Down syndrome child will be able to fish. I hope he can. But he wanted the child born in Alaska. So she not only risked her life, she not only risked her child's life, but think about everybody on that flight. I mean, had she gone into very strict contractions, I assume they would have had to make an emergency landing. Imagine then. Governor of Alaska forces emergency landing because she didn't tell the plane she had begun labor that morning, otherwise known as Babygate 2. There is Trooper Gate. We will get into that. And then there's two more gates, two of my favorites. One is her support of Pat Buchanan for president in 1992, in 1996. The McCain campaign is trying to get out of that one, but Pat Buchanan specifically remembers her. We'll talk about that. And then my personal favorite, better than Baby Gate 1, better than Baby Gate 2, better than Buchanan Gate, better than Trooper Gate, I call it Secession Gate. Yes, Sarah Palin and her husband Todd were apparently somewhat active in the Alaskan Independence Party, a party that doesn't believe Alaska is properly part of the United States at all, a party that seeks Alaska becoming an independent state. Now, I firmly believe that people have the First Amendment right to ask for whatever they wish to ask for, but a president of the United States, a vice president of the United States, a member of a secessionist party, even if it was only her husband who was the member, can you imagine if Michelle Obama had for any length of time been interested in a secessionist party? Well, wouldn't the Republicans go crazy? What if Michelle Obama was part of a movement to have a separate black state, and she was there for only a couple of meetings? Don't you think the Republican Party would throw a fit? So I want to talk about Secession Gate, too. There really are so many aspects of this story, and I want to hear from you as well. I want to know if you're insulted. I particularly want to hear from women if women are insulted. Because Hillary Clinton, for all she talks about 18 million cracks in that glass ceiling, she didn't run to be a woman president. Hillary Clinton ran to be president. Hillary Clinton ran and said, heck, I have the most experience to be president, she said. She said, I have more experience than Barack Obama. She said, I've got views on all these issues, which she did. She of course, is in the forefront of universal health care. Hillary Clinton was a formidable candidate. In fact, Barack Obama barely beat her, as you know. It was a very close race. But Hillary was formidable because she was a good candidate, because she was a strong candidate. Not because she was a woman. Sure, some people voted for her as a woman, but she was understood not to be a token. Compare that with, say, Geraldine Ferraro, Walter Mondale's choice in 1984. Now, I got to say, well, Geraldine Ferraro, she was a token. Let's face it, Geraldine Ferraro had been there for three terms of Congress. It wasn't like she'd done anything particularly special during that time. It wasn't like she was even known very well. Walter Mondale looked out, said, look, I need a female candidate. I'll take Geraldine Ferraro. She was a token. Geraldine Ferraro was no Hillary Clinton. Sarah Palin isn't even Geraldine Ferraro. I mean, this is a woman who very famously, if you haven't seen the YouTube clip, you really got to check it out. She very famously said, I don't even know what a VP does. And until somebody lets me know what a VP does, well, I'm just going to stay here in Alaska. Kind of like how she sounded. A VP, you would think someone running for the vice presidency of the United States would say vice president. I mean, she really doesn't seem to be that qualified. But I want to know if you're insulted, because I am waiting for that magical moment when Joe Biden, Senator Biden, does to Governor Palin the same thing that Lloyd Benson did to Dan Quayle. I can see it now, right? Joe Biden turns to her, Governor Palin, who said something about, you know, elect me because I'm a woman. He would say, you know, or maybe she would say, I'm just like Hillary Clinton. I'm going to break the glass ceiling, which kind of rankled inside of me when I heard her say that. And I'm just waiting for Joe Biden to turn to her and say, Governor Palin, I know Hillary Clinton. I've worked with Hillary Clinton. I know her well. I've seen her. I know how she works. I know how she thinks. Sarah Palin, you're no Hillary Clinton. Just as Joe Biden said to Dan Quayle when he compared himself to John Kennedy, who Lloyd Benson called Jack Kennedy. So I want to know if you're insulted. I want to hear from you. Are you insulted by this choice? And I want to spend the entire hour talking about all the different gates, all the different scandals relating to Sarah Palin, and also vetting gate. Because at the end of the day, whatever we say about Sarah Palin, all of this reflects back on John McCain. I mean, it's really more about him than it is about her. why did he choose her? Why did he choose her at the last minute? My belief, it's because, let's face it, John McCain is a consummate gambler. He likes to gamble, and this is just a perfect example of how John McCain acts. So when we come back, I'm going to tell you a little bit about John McCain's gambling habits and the vetting of Sarah Palin. But if you want to call in, let me know. Are you insulted by this choice, particularly women? But men can call in, too. How do you think women across the country are reacting to this? Are they insulted? 877-4-HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. We'll be right back after this.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95.
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention
$24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. Joe Lieberman is a traitor to his party and to causes that he has championed. Call him Benedict Joseph. There he was, unctuous as always, with that fake aw shucks routine, asking what's a Democrat like him doing at a Republican convention like this? Well, there's an easy answer to that one. He's not a Democrat, and certainly shouldn't be construed as one. And he's proven how little distance there is between a DLC Democrat and a Republican. It sure is a short walk, and he did it smugly. With utmost paternalism, he called Barack Obama a young man. And with astonishing lack of principle, Lieberman spoke directly into the camera to address what he called my fellow Democrats and independents, urging them all to vote for McCain. Joe Lieberman used to be a fighter for civil rights. Joe Lieberman used to have 100% rating from NARAL. Joe Lieberman led the latest congressional charge on global warming, but now he's thrown in with the party that is 180 degrees away from these positions. In this role, Lieberman resembles no character so much as Rabbi Bengelsdorf in Philip Roth's The Plot Against America, who shamelessly sucks up to Charles Lindbergh. That's him, Shameless Joe. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. We're talking about Sarah Palin, the choice of John McCain to be Vice President of the United States, the most qualified, he said. You know, I remember when George Bush Sr. chose Clarence Thomas to be on the United States Supreme Court. And everyone said, did you choose him because he's black? Oh, no, 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 said Bush Sr. No, 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 I chose him because he was the most qualified. So the American Bar Association checked him out, as they do every nominee to every federal court, by the way, not just the United States Supreme Court. And they have three separate categories, well-qualified, qualified, and not qualified. The great majority are well-qualified. A few are qualified. Clarence Thomas was not qualified. And, of course, Clarence Thomas has done more to harm African-Americans than, well, practically anybody on this planet, certainly as much as any white dude would do. But notwithstanding that, there were a few, dare I say, ignorant African-Americans who said, well, you know what? The guy is black. He can't be as evil as everyone says he is. He can't be as horrific. He can't be as anti-black as everyone says he is because, well, the guy's black. So there were a few African-American organizations that actually endorsed Clarence Thomas. Today, every single one of those organizations, indeed every individual that I've ever heard of that is African-American and endorsed Clarence Thomas in 1992, has withdrawn that endorsement, has said they were wrong, has said they will never, ever support such a candidate again. Well, John McCain's trying the same thing for women, for, let's say, Hillary Clinton supporters. Now, other women, let's face it, if you are a pro-life woman, if you believe that the Word of God is irrevocably put in whatever version of the Bible you have, I don't know how you take the Bible literally, because I don't know which Bible to take, but let's say you believe that God gave Moses the King James Version from on high in English, and you believe in taking that Bible literally, except for those stupid things about helping the poor and the needy, because Jesus didn't really mean it when he was saying, you know, bad stuff about rich people. And so you got to ignore part of it. But let's say you believe, like Sarah Palin, that the earth was created in 6 days, and we should teach that to children in public schools. And you think that global warming isn't real, it's not coming, that ice falling off the Arctic shelf is, well, I guess those things are fake. I guess it's all fake. If you believe that we need to work harder so that we can give more tax money to ExxonMobil, because after all, they just don't have enough, if you believe in the entire Republican agenda, you believe in invading countries that haven't attacked us, torturing innocent people, holding people in jail without trial. If you believe I'm spying on every American citizen, in other words, if you're a Republican, then I don't blame you for supporting Sarah Palin. And if you're a Republican woman, I'm not really talking to you. But if you are or were a supporter of Hillary Clinton, if you believe, as so many women have, and men too, by the way, and I know a number of them, who fervently supported the Clinton campaign. And I, myself, as anyone knows who's listened to me consistently over the past few months, knows that I had a very hard choice myself between Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. After all, I decide on the issues virtually every time, and they were virtually identical on the issues. I mean, I tried to separate them on the issues. I had a hard time. Those of you that remember my endorsement of Barack Obama a few months ago know that I spent the first 95% of the broadcast saying, well, they're the same on this, and they're the same on that, and the same on this, and, well, Hillary Clinton, I like her slightly better on health care, but, well, Obama came out against the Iraq War first, and I went back and forth and back and forth. You know, Obama was right on the bankruptcy bill, and finally I decided, look, I can't choose between them based on issues. They came to a tie. And so I decided that Obama was a better candidate based on the fact that he was drawing a new excitement. He was drawing in all those young voters. He was bringing excitement to the political process that I didn't see Hillary Clinton was bringing. And I felt like he had a better chance to win. And that was really it. It was a tough decision. And if you voted for Hillary Clinton in the primary, I got no problems with you. I'm not going to disrespect you. Listen, she was a very, very strong choice. But if you voted for Hillary, and you're even thinking about voting for John McCain because of the choice of Sarah Palin, well, then you're not thinking. Or you don't know Sarah Palin that well. And there are some, let's face it, mostly white women, though there are certainly men, and I don't know if there are any non-whites, maybe some Latinos. There are some who said, I really, really like Hillary Clinton. I want to see a woman as president someday. Therefore, I'm considering McCain Palin. And, you know, I really like Hillary Clinton, and I want to see a woman be president someday. But there's no way I would vote for McCain Palin. There's no way I would vote to have a theocracy established in America. There is no way I would vote for a woman who doesn't even know what a VP is supposed to do. Because, you know, vice presidents today are not just sitting around waiting for the president to die and breaking ties in the Senate. They haven't done that for a long time. Vice presidents from Walter Mondale to Al Gore to, let's face it, even Dick Cheney, in fact, especially Dick Cheney, have wielded tremendous power for good and certainly for evil. But they don't just sit there anymore. They are very important players in most administrations. Now, maybe John McCain thinks that Sarah Palin will just sort of sit in the corner and wait for him to die, and she may do that. But you know what? That's not my understanding of the kind of person that she is. I've been reading about Sarah Barracuda, that was her nickname on the basketball court, and she's known as a woman who's extremely competitive and also has got a pretty foul temper. Now, John McCain has a foul temper, too. He's known to quickly get mad and to let people have it. Interestingly, so is she. So I am just waiting for that day when the two of them go after each other. I just hope it happens before November and it's leaked. Because let's face it, John McCain doesn't know her. She by far is the one he knows least. When did John McCain meet her? The very day, in the very meeting, he offered her the vice presidency. The first time John McCain ever met Sarah Palin face to face was the Thursday of last week, 6 days ago, that he offered her the job. Oh, well, but what if he, I mean, Alaska's far away. When was the first time he talked to her? The Sunday before. That's right. First time he met her, the day he offered her the job. First time he talked to her on the phone, 4 days before. So what's up with McCain? He had 6 months almost to make his choice, twice as long as Barack Obama, really 3 times longer than Barack Obama. What's he doing making all these choices at the last minute? Well, it turns out that part of it is reactive, right? John McCain didn't choose the person he thought was most qualified to be president the way Barack Obama did. He didn't choose someone he wanted to work in his administration the way Barack Obama did. He didn't choose someone that he wanted to talk back to him and give him independent, unvarnished advice the way Barack Obama did with Joe Biden. No, he didn't choose someone who he wanted to be a person of the people to let him know what people were thinking, to let him know what ordinary Americans were thinking the way Barack Obama did with Joe Biden. Joe Biden, as you know, takes the train to Wilmington, Delaware every single day. Every day he goes to Washington, he takes that train there and that train back, 2 hours each way. And you can't help when you spend 4 hours each day, but get to know everyone on that train, get to be a man of the people. No, McCain didn't choose for any of those reasons. McCain chose her because she's a woman, because she's a token. And he didn't even choose a strong woman like Kay Bailey Hutchison. No, he wanted someone he could control. So that was really what it was. He needed a woman who was an evangelical Christian who he felt he could control. But frankly, I'm not even sure he can control her. After all, she didn't tell his aides about her pregnant daughter until last Wednesday. More and more information is coming out about vetting gate. We'll get to Sarah Palin and her individual problems a little bit later on. But right now, the most interesting thing is vetting gate, is John McCain, and when he chose her. And I've talked about this on the program before. It seems to me this all goes back to their gambling habits. I've had people say, Mark, what do the gambling habits of a presidential candidate have anything to do with their presidency? And I say, everything. I've talked about this before. If you haven't heard it, I just think it's an interesting little fact to share with your friends. Barack Obama, like me, is a poker player. He plays nickel-dime poker. And he's known by his friends to be kind of a slow player. He makes careful, considered decisions. Every time it's his turn to go, He thinks, he makes up his mind, he weighs the options, and then he makes his bet. That's how Barack Obama plays poker. John McCain, exactly the opposite. John McCain plays for much higher stakes, thousands of dollars, and he doesn't play poker, he plays craps. I don't know what you know about craps, but it's all on a roll of the dice. John McCain will stick thousands of dollars on a single number and roll, hoping to get that number. If he doesn't, well, he'll spend thousands of dollars more on another number. He loves the thrill. He loves the excitement. And if he loses, well, he's got a lot more to spend. After all, his wife is a beer heiress. His second wife, the one he's married to now, the one he cheated with while he was married to his first wife. So, John McCain's a gambler. Much like George Bush, it's invade now, ask questions later. Put the money on the craps table, and then we'll figure out what we're going to do with it. Choose your vice president off the seat of your pants, and then deal with the consequences later. Think about just that and how they'd be president. If your moderate friends, the ones you can't tell the difference between a Democrat and a Republican, and you know who they are, if they, you know, say, well, I'm just not sure, I don't really like liberals, tell them about Obama's gambling habits and John McCain's gambling habits, and ask them if they want a president who risks American lives and American dollars on the thrill of a bet. Because that's exactly what John McCain did with Sarah Palin. It's exactly what he did. He rolled the dice. He wanted a surprise. He was so excited about the surprise because he thought it was really cool to surprise the nation with surprise choice. Indeed, apparently it was down to either Sarah Palin or Tim Pawlenty, governor of Minnesota, and that was the choice everyone expected. That was a choice even that a few Republicans leaked the night of Obama's speech to take attention away from Obama's speech. He's a Minnesota governor. He's relatively young. He's pro-life. He's relatively inoffensive. You know, he's a typical Republican. He's offensive in that way, but there was really nothing particularly terrible about him. Why didn't McCain choose him? Well, he wasn't a surprise. Everybody was talking about him. I mean, we know why he didn't choose Mitt Romney. He couldn't put a Mormon on the ticket because Christian fundamentalists won't vote for a Mormon, even if he agrees with everything they stand for. And, well, he couldn't put Lieberman on the ticket or Christine Todd Whitman or any of the, or Tom Ridge even, governor of Pennsylvania, because they're all pro-choice. So it came down to Tim Pawlenty and Sarah Palin, and he said, well, everyone's expecting Pawlenty. So I know, I'll pick Palin. Won't that be fun? It'll be fun, just like throwing thousands of dollars on the craps table. But it came back to bite him. It came back to bite him. And when we come back, I'm going to talk about the vetting process, specifically the things that John McCain did or didn't do in vetting Sarah Palin, and then some of the details of Trooper Gate, Baby Gate 1, Baby Gate 2, don't forget Secession Gate, Buchanan Gate, and even a new one I've discovered today, Pledge of Allegiance Gate. But if you want to call in, don't let any of this stop you, because I really want to hear what you think of this wonderful vice presidential choice. The phone number is 877-4-HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. We'll be right back after this.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
This is the story about a group of kids who volunteered.
We fixed stuff.
Did some art projects with the kids.
Cleaned up the park.
We worked in the woods.
I just wanted to do something.
We fixed up this house.
Did something for the planet.
Hey, that was all I needed. And you know what? It was great.
It was a blast.
At first, they didn't know each other.
I didn't know anyone.
Well, that didn't last long.
This guy is really funny.
Me?
These are my new friends. These are really good new friends.
Are you into it?
Are You Into It is a volunteer program for kids like you who care. If you want to make a difference in your community and make friends, call 4-H toll-free at 1-888-77-YOUTH or check out our website at www.areyouintoit.com.
This definitely made a difference.
I feel like I could do everything.
Yeah!
A public service message brought to you by 4-H, the Cooperative Extension System, and the Ad Council.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. We're talking about McCain's incredible choice of Sarah Palin, the governor of Alaska, the woman who just 2 years ago was the mayor of a town of 5,000 people in Wasilla, Alaska, to be, yes, his vice presidential choice, his running mate, his soulmate, as John McCain called her. It's interesting. John McCain originally married a model. The model, his first wife, had an unfortunate accident. She apparently was disfigured a bit, was not as pretty as she once was. So John McCain cheated on her with a dozen different women, including his current wife, Cindy McCain. Well, now he's choosing another model. This one, another ex-model, you know, we know that Sarah Palin was Ms. Wasilla and runner-up to Ms. Alaska. And, well, that's his soulmate. His soulmate, John McCain said. His soulmate, a woman that he first talked to 4 days before he chose her and first met the day of the choice. Boy, that was a busy week for John McCain. For one thing, she didn't disclose until the Wednesday, the day before she met John McCain, the day before he made his choice. Her first day in Arizona was Wednesday. That was, of course, the night after it was clear that Hillary Clinton was not going to be the nominee. It was clear that, she made her speech, and I guess McCain wanted to wait to see, to make his reactive token female choice. In any case, that day, that Wednesday, finally she comes to Arizona, and she meets with the head of John McCain's betting team, a guy by the name of Arthur B. Culverhouse. And it's that day, that first day, that she meets Culverhouse, that she discloses about her 17-year-old daughter being pregnant. That wasn't disclosed before then. So I guess I shouldn't be surprised that so many people in the McCain campaign, and frankly not a few Palin spokespeople, were surprised by the pregnancy. And, of course, she was the one that he was least familiar with. In fact, although McCain points out that she and the other choices had a lengthy questionnaire to fill out, when campaign officials for McCain were asked, did she fill out that questionnaire before she got to Arizona, they said, no comment. No comment. She had 6 months to fill out a questionnaire. They asked a simple question. Did she fill it out before she got to Arizona last Wednesday, the day before McCain chose her, 2 days before the announcement to the public? Did she fill out her questionnaire? No comment. My guess is, well, she filled it out on the plane. So she didn't know about her daughter, Palin's daughter's pregnancy, and some other things, you know, her husband's arrest for DUI and fines she had paid for fishing and things like that. But what's fascinating about all of this is just how quick, just how slipshod this whole thing was done. I mean, even on Thursday, the day John McCain offered the job to Palin, officials were still chasing down last-minute information. Talk about procrastination. Wow. So there are a number of things that they just got wrong. I guess they didn't know what they were doing. You'd think John McCain, having been senator for a long time, would know how to check up on someone. But, well, the campaign officials didn't know that her daughter was pregnant. She didn't know. And apparently, they didn't know about the Alaskan Independence Party, too, or her support for Buchanan. In fact, the only thing they did know about was Trooper Gates, which I will talk to in a minute. One thing that the McCain campaign insisted, though, was at least they had an FBI do a criminal background check. Two campaign officials, in fact, told us the Washington Post, but it was a lie. The FBI has said they don't do background checks for political parties. They only do them for government officials. So two separate campaign officials lied to the Washington Post? Apparently so. I mean, it's such a little thing in the scheme of things, but two McCain officials lie. Well, who told them that they ran a background check that they didn't run? Did they make it up themselves, or were they told to lie by someone else? Either way, we see the kind of campaign that John McCain runs. The one thing that they did know in advance, though, and I do believe they knew this in advance, was what has been affectionately called Troopergate in Alaska. This, of course, is the quite complex set of facts surrounding Palin's firing of Walt Monaghan, the public safety commissioner, because Walt Monaghan wouldn't fire an Alaskan trooper, Mike Wooten, who's her ex-brother-in-law. Did you get it? Because the list of players is kind of complicated. You have Palin's sister, and she has a messy divorce and custody case with her husband. So she divorces him. His name is Mike Wooten. He's an Alaska state trooper. And I ain't defending Wooten. He may be a terrible guy for all I know. But I do know this. His trooper boss, his police boss, found what he was doing, punished him for like 5 days or 10 days, and that was it. But that wasn't enough for Palin and her sister, and particularly for Sarah Palin's husband, Todd Palin. They all wanted this guy canned. In fact, the judge of the custody case said, why do you want this guy fired so much? He's got to pay child support. The judge wouldn't hear of it. But you have Wooten's boss's boss, which is the head of the whole police in Alaska. In Alaska, the state troopers are the police in a lot of the areas. In fact, except for there's only one city, really, in all of Alaska, and that's Anchorage. All the rest are small towns. So the Alaska state troopers do a lot of things that ordinary police do in other cities, and their boss is the public safety commissioner, who was Walt Monaghan. Well, Walt Monaghan apparently didn't think that Mike Wooten should be fired, and so he was pressured again and again and again by Todd Palin, the governor's husband, by a number of people on the governor's staff, and according to Walt Monaghan, by Palin herself, who called him and asked him to fire Wooten. Did so in ways that were, let's say, oh, wink, wink, nod, nod. Things like, well, you know, having Mike Wooten on the force doesn't set a good example. I'm not telling you to fire him, but will no one rid me of this meddlesome priest? In other words, that last, of course, is a reference to Thomas A. Beckett's murder by Henry II. Will no one rid me of this meddlesome priest? What she was saying, in effect, wink, wink, nod, nod, was fire this guy. Well, when he didn't, she fired Monaghan. And she insisted that she fired Monaghan, not because of Wooten, but because, well, he didn't do the things she wanted her to do in public safety, and he'd be better off in the alcohol unit, even though just a few months earlier she had criticized him for what he'd been doing with regard to preventing people from drinking alcohol. It's all very complex, but the heart of the situation is this. Palin lied. Palin completely lied. She said she hadn't called, none of her staff had called, when she, her husband, and her staff had called. In fact, Monaghan says he even has emails directly from the governor telling him to get rid of Wooten. So the Alaskan legislature did something that's rarely done in legislatures these days. Republicans and Democrats combined. The Republicans are in charge of the legislature. They had a majority, but they joined with the Democrats to have a bipartisan investigation. And so Sarah Wooten is going to have to testify before the Alaskan state legislature. I don't know if she'll do the Karl Rove trick and refuse and make them hold her in contempt. Sure, that doesn't look good for a vice presidential nominee. But some in the legislature are even talking about impeachment. It's that severe. That's what the Democratic leader, Hollister French, is talking about. But she's going to have to testify, and they are determined to have an investigation completed by October, just in time for the election. Apparently, John McCain knew all about this. Sarah Palin knew, too. That's why she ordered her own attorney general, someone on her side, to investigate as well. Apparently, the idea was she would learn all the information that the bipartisan committee of the legislature knew so that when she was being investigated, well, she'd know what they had. It always helps when you're defending yourself to know what they know. That way you can admit, oh, all the emails and phone calls that they know about and deny all the ones they don't know about. Pretty shifty stuff. Pretty heavy investigation. An impeachment scandal when she's only a year and a half in office. Very impressive. It's kind of hard to do that. I mean, even Bush and Cheney, people didn't talk about impeachment until 3-4 years in. For Palin, it was a year and a half. McCain apparently knew about Troopergate. He didn't know about Babygate 1 until the day before he chose her, the day he found out that her 17-year-old daughter was pregnant. And again, I'm not after her daughter, but I do think it relates to her mother's policies on abstinence-only education and on no, of course, not having an abortion. But Babygate 2, we still don't know if McCain knew about that. We don't know if he knew that she flew 8 hours, the distance from Chicago to London, just because she had to have her baby born in Alaska and didn't tell Alaska Airlines about that. This one's hardly been talked about at all, and yet the facts are undisputed. But my two favorites, and we only have a few minutes left, but I will tell you my two favorite scandals. The first is her support by Pat Buchanan, or more specifically, her support of Pat Buchanan. Because you can't blame a presidential candidate for his or her supporters, right? I don't blame Obama if some crazy person supports him. I don't blame John McCain if some crazy person supports him. But who you support, well, that's different. It wasn't a question of Buchanan supporting her. She supported Buchanan. If you go to my website at radioinsidescoop.com, you'll see all of these facts laid out in detail. And if you click the link that relates to Buchanan, you can hear Pat Buchanan himself say that Sarah and her husband Todd were part of his brigade. They were brigaders, he said. They were fine people fighting for him. They even attended a fundraiser for Buchanan. Well, John McCain denies it. He says her only association with Pat Buchanan was in 1999 when Buchanan visited Wasilla, and she wore a Buchanan button welcoming him to the city. But while people are discounting the button, no one's talking about the fact that Pat Buchanan remembers her. Now, Pat Buchanan, of course, is quite a controversial figure. Pat Buchanan was well known at the time I worked in the Justice Department hunting Nazis. When I worked there, getting rid of Nazi war criminals who were in the United States, every time I opened a file, I would see on the right-hand side the name of the criminal and the people he murdered and, you know, his height and weight and his old picture. And on the left-hand side of that folder, every folder, was the article by Pat Buchanan arguing why that Nazi war criminal should stay in the United States. Generally, Pat Buchanan argued that whatever the Nazis did, it wasn't as bad as the communists. And so, for example, Wernher von Braun, even though 20,000 people died in his labor camp, heck, he helped America make missiles to fight the communists. That was penance for his 20,000 murders. Pat Buchanan is a weird sort. I mean, he was absolutely right on Iraq, but he's someone, let's face it, who's got a weakness for Nazis. In any case, it's fascinating to me that Palin supported Buchanan. Now, I don't know whether she knew Pat Buchanan's fondness for Nazis or not. She may not have known, in which case, well, she's kind of ignorant to support a candidate and not know these kind of crazy positions he has. After all, she was supporting him against the Republican candidate, Bob Dole, who is just a classic Republican. Why was she supporting someone as extreme as Pat Buchanan? And more interestingly, what is it that we are to believe? Is Pat Buchanan telling the truth, or is McCain telling the truth? Buchanan says she was there. McCain says she wasn't. Now, who's more likely to know the ins and outs of the Buchanan campaign, Pat Buchanan or John McCain? I would suggest Pat Buchanan knows more about the Pat Buchanan campaign for president than John McCain knows about the Pat Buchanan campaign for president. And interestingly, even though I think Buchanan's views are weird and in many ways pro-fascist and definitely abhorrent in lots of ways, the weird thing about Pat Buchanan is I won't call him a liar. I don't think he is. I remember back in 2000 when all those elderly Jewish people in South Florida, including some Holocaust survivors, accidentally voted for Pat Buchanan because of that bad butterfly ballot. And Pat Buchanan, to his credit, didn't argue that the Holocaust survivors were actually voting for him. Pat Buchanan, knowing his fondness for Nazis, admitted that, yes, those were votes that were meant to go for Al Gore. He could have lied. He could have been like all the Republicans that said, well, maybe Buchanan actually got those votes. No, Buchanan told the truth. And he told the truth about that. I think he's telling the truth here. Why would he lie? He's a supporter of John McCain. Why would he lie? But all of this, Troopergate, Babygate 1, Babygate 2, Buchanan Gate, even Pledge of Allegiance Gate, which is where Sarah Palin said that the Pledge of Allegiance was written by the founders of America, and that's why we have to keep under God, showing her ignorance about that, since obviously the Pledge is from the 19th century and under God is from the 1950s. Now, all of this pales in comparison to Secession Gate. Yes, the Alaskan Independence Party believes that the incorporation of Alaska into the United States in 1958 was illegal, a violation of international law, a violation of the United Nations Charter. They want a vote. They want a vote on whether or not to make Alaska an independent country. And you might say that, well, it's just a bunch of wackos out in the snow, but Sarah Palin attended their state convention with her husband Todd, who was a card-carrying member. They went to that convention back in 1994, and even as recently as March of 2008, March of this year, 4 months ago, Sarah Palin was delivering a welcome address as a governor to the secessionist convention. So I think someone needs to ask her, should Alaska secede from the United States? There's a lot more to uncover under this rock, bugs and moths and everything else, but it's my time to go. So I hope you enjoyed the Inside Scoop. I'll see you tomorrow. This is Mark Levine, signing off.